Welcome back to the Nutrition Education and Racial Disparities in Health podcast from the Holistic Matters podcast series. For the past few months, I've been talking with my co-hosts Sarah, Megan, and Karma with thought leaders in holistic healthcare about public health nutrition, natural approaches to medicine, and the unique perspective of minority communities in the context of health and nutrition. Today, Dr. Karma James switches roles from host to guest to tell us about growing up in the Caribbean and her unique experience with food and nutrition.
Well, let's just jump right in then, Karma. I know I've always been intrigued by your background and where you grew up. So can you speak a little bit about growing up in the Caribbean?
So as you know, I grew up on the lovely island of St. Lucia, also known as the Helen of the West. And I always promote my island where I come from because it is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And so I grew up, I spent most of my life there. My family is still there. And growing up, you know, life was pretty simple and laid back. My dad, he owned a farm at the time, so that was a really fun part of my childhood. And we lived in a community in the eastern part of the island, what most people would call the countryside. You know, we were outdoors, getting to know, you know, the people around and everything around us. So St. Lucia is, like I said, very laid back. Food and drink and having a good time is a huge part of our culture. We're very hard workers. We tend to, you know, push the boundaries. We tend to want to strive for best, but we also like to party a lot and put as much stock and value in relaxing and having a really good time.
Sign me up. I'll be going with you on to your next trip home, probably. So you talked about a few different things I want to, you know, elaborate a bit on. One being your farm. So can you talk a little bit about farming in St. Lucia? As I know, you know, this podcast series we've been going through has so many different, you know, aspects of farming here in the United States. And we're talking about, you know, different crops that are probably way different than what you were experiencing growing up.
Yeah, so growing up, my dad had a banana farm. And back then, you know, bananas were the main export and source of revenue for the country. That has since shifted to tourism. But I grew up in a time when the banana industry was a big deal. Having a banana farm and on banana cutting days, as they would call it, when the bananas were harvested and had to be taken to the geese boat, which was a really big deal back then, because the geese boat would come in and take all the bananas to Europe. Farmers with their vehicles would be lined up for miles trying to get their bananas in. And that was a really big part of it. My dad also worked at the St. Lucia Banana Growers Association. And part of his job was to, he had multiple roles during that time. But one of the jobs that I remembered was he went into the different communities, connecting with the farmers and, you know, helping them with the way they grew their bananas. And he had that farm where we also grew bananas. But he also grew peppers. We had Scotch bonnet peppers, more specifically. There were mangoes, lots of citrus trees. And when he wasn't, you know, selling his bananas, he also eventually got into exporting some of those different fruits and products. So farming in St. Lucia for a long time was really geared towards bananas. It slowly changed a little bit when that industry kind of collapsed. And the biggest thing we had was bananas. Other than farmers would grow other produce like dashing, also known as taro, yams, but those were more for like local consumption and to be sold to hotels. You'd had your typical greens like celery, parsley, that a lot of the farmers would come into our markets in the city, and you'd have that where persons can go buy those. You'd have your tomatoes, your lettuce, and all of these different, you know, typical fruits and vegetables, carrots, cabbage. A lot of those things are grown in St. Lucia, but they never grew as large of a scale as bananas did. And if farmers did grow those, it was primarily to sell them to the hotels.
Wow, that is so fascinating. You really had the whole food, like farm to table concept, I feel like, for your entire life.
Yes. And coming to the US and, you know, seeing how it's now being showcased, I guess, in a different way. Yeah, it's really is how a lot of people grew up, especially if you didn't grow up in and around the city. It really was farm to table. Your neighbors always would have some sort of thing they grew in their backyard, and you would trade or they would share. And so you just go dig up the dasheen or the yams, and somebody would give you that, and you'd trade that for some extra bananas that you went out, which we call green figs. You'd go out, and when you're ready to cook, you'd literally be cutting a hand of green figs from the tree right before you cook it for dinner. Or you'd go out and pick the avocados that you'd later have in a salad. So a lot of that was how we grew up with my grandmother, my father. My dad really pushed for that. He wasn't a huge fan of fast food and anything that wasn't really home cooked. That was a really big way of life for us. My mom cooked every day. She was not a proponent of leftovers. She believed in cooking a fresh meal every day. So that, and fish and you know, meat. And most of our diet comprised of, you had to have your meat, of course. Very rarely did you find people being vegetarians by choice, unless they had some sort of health issue or they were Rastafarian and they avoided meat. But most people would eat meat. You tended to have a good balance of meat and fish in your diet. You saved a lot of the pork and the beef and cooking that on Sundays. And your plate most of the time would have your salad and your vegetables. You'd have your legumes. You'd have your ground provisions with your plantains and your yams and what have you, and your meat. That was a typical plate growing up.
Wow. So food access and availability was really going to based on not only what you had growing, but what your neighbors were growing. And it really does sound like it was a whole family ordeal. You mentioned, you know, always having a fresh, you know, home-cooked meal. And I feel like a lot of times those are things that are a little bit more removed from today's family practices, if you would. Like, I love that, because I think that is something that really brings home that, like, you know, food is medicine concept, and, you know, really, you know, having those conversations around the dinner table. So it's probably no surprise that, you know, you are a food scientist today. So would you say, like, all of those, you know, experiences from, you know, not only farming to cooking to family concepts around meals, like, how has that inspired your career choice?
It did so indirectly, if I'm being honest. Growing up, I loved to cook. My mom, she did catering at times. So being, you know, in there in the kitchen and seeing how she prepared meals for literally hundreds of people at a time was always really fascinating to me. So my household was, food was a really big part of that. Like I said, my mom cooked all the time. So I always loved food, and I grew up always liking to cook, learning about what my mom did. I was sort of a picky eater. And so when it came to when I was a certain age, a lot of the reasons why I ended up cooking was because I liked my food and things done a certain way. So I did it myself, and I didn't like certain ingredients in there. And so I started doing it myself, and it just became, you know, a passion for me. I learned to love to cook for myself and for other people. And that is what drove my career eventually to food science. But food science wasn't always on my radar. Surprisingly, I like sciences, and I studied that in school, because in St. Lucia, our school system is a little bit different. And in high school, or secondary school, as we call it, I chose a combination of the science and language path, with chemistry being my focus and my strong point. But I wanted to get into the sciences because I was naturally curious, and I was really into being a detective. Actually, when I started undergrad, I started with a chemistry degree with a focus in forensic science because I wanted to become a forensic scientist. I wanted to be able to solve mysteries. But then when I was trying to get into grad school or figure out what my next step was during an internship, I noticed that there weren't that many PhD programs in forensic science. And I always knew I wanted to do a PhD. As a scientist, it just didn't make sense to not go all the way if you could. I couldn't find a PhD program in forensics. The closest was analytical chemistry. And I did an internship in that, and I was slowly realizing that wasn't for me. And so I was asked what I was passionate about. And that's in that moment, the first thing that came to mind was food and cooking. And then I was like, you know, well, maybe I could take all of that and put it into food science. And that's why I am where I am today. And I'm really glad I did that, because it brought back all of the things that I grew up with, all of the focus on food, the focus on urban remedies for stuff, you know, food being a huge part of my life, the fact that I like to cook, and being able to combine that with science, which I was really passionate about and fairly good at, you know, it just made for the perfect marriage.
That is so amazing. And you still, I feel like, are a bit of a food detective today, right? Like, I don't think that's the title. But, you know, you are always are kind of diving into what is good, or quote unquote, the right nutrition or the right way to, you know, formulate something. So I think, you know, you really, like you said, have married both your passions and your, you know, education and expertise, and doing kind of that food detective work today. So I guess, could you talk a little bit about, you know, how, or what was perceived as maybe the right nutrition or the proper nutrition growing up, and how maybe any of those practices may have differed, you know, coming here, or, you know, maybe have changed or evolved over time? Because I would imagine you've got some family remedies or family traditions that I'm curious as if you still use today, or how maybe you use that in your work.
Yeah, so good and right nutrition growing up was always fresh home-cooked food using the things around you. That has always been the premise for, you know, what good nutrition is. So like I said, my mom cooked every day. We would cook a lot of the stuff around us. Of course, you'd have to purchase the meat. We weren't afraid of, like, you know, spices, which is a big part of our culture, or going to the supermarket, but not so much as we do here, where right now, I think one of the biggest differences, I rely on the supermarket to get everything that I have to cook with. Whereas growing up, that was not the case. A lot of the things grew right then and there. My dad, for example, would not buy us, you know, store-bought orange juice or sodas and stuff like that. He would be like, if you wanted those things, you go outside and you pick the grapefruits and you make grapefruit juice. You pick the lime juice and you make lime juice. So for a while, you know, as a child growing up, it seemed like a lot of work and it was frustrating, but now I could see the value in that. Also too, he wanted us to have the best nutrition. But as a child, when you see the advertisements and the influence of America and the commercials for Sunny D and all of that, and also too, when you're in school and your colleagues or your classmates all have those things, at one point, being able to buy stuff from the supermarket and having it also correlated to a certain status in society and wealth, and growing your own food and, you know, eating around you had a correlation with not having as many advantages and being less fortunate to a certain extent. So there was always that stigma attached to that. So that kind of influenced how I perceived a few things growing up. You always wanted to be with the in crowd for sure. But when your dad was forcing you to take your, you know, meals from home to school, and you weren't given money to purchase, or you weren't given the box juices and all of that, you felt you weren't being part of the in crowd. But looking back now, I could see, you know, he was really pushing for better health and wellness and nutrition for us. And we've since learned that a lot of these processed and packaged things are not the healthiest. So, for us, healthy food has always been eating and growing and using what it is that you have around you that comes from the earth.
Yes. And I think you've even, you know, alluded to so many things that are still somewhat relevant today. You know, I know, you know, working with school age children, that is a very similar thing, right? Everybody wants to have the cool food, or, you know, the latest, like Lunchables, you know, I can imagine those. And, you know, and it's funny because, yes, that to your point, it was seen as a certain status, if you would. But now, knowing what we all know in nutrition, you know, those actually are the least nutritious, least costly than, you know, the whole orange juice or the whole grapefruit juice, like the natural products that are on the shelves today. So I think, you know, by and large, you know, not to go on a separate rant, but that's a whole different public health, you know, endeavor to take on. But, you know, I really do. I'm proud that your parents, you know, really instilled that. And that was something that obviously has trickled down. And I'm sure that's something not only you still value, but you're, you know, in your future, anybody that you will talk to also will kind of gather that from you, because it's something that has influenced your health and how you view nutrition today.
Yeah, it really was ingrained in us. And, you know, you try to rebel because you want to, like I said, stay with the times. But at the end of the day, it still influences how I cook, what I eat, because of those things. And because, you know, the paradigm has sort of shifted, as you mentioned, with, you know, whole food and farm to table being seen as the healthier, and albeit it's more expensive now, you know, it for me was, well, this is how it always was. You know, good examples are, you know, making your own coconut oil. You know, that's something we did. You didn't want to be associated with coconut oil going to school because people made fun of you and laughed at you if you smelled like it. But now coconut oil is in everything and everybody's looking for coconut oil in everything. But that's something that, you know, we made, and my grandmother would make those concoctions for when you had a cold, mix it with lavender and put it in your head. And, you know, you didn't want to be associated with that. But these things are coming back and they're gaining a lot more traction. You know, you'd have people who would take hibiscus leaves that grew just about everywhere and crush those up in water and use that as shampoo. And, you know, it was seen as, you know, they were poor or they couldn't afford like the Put Plus or the Pantene Pro V, and they use that. But now products with real hibiscus extract cost so much more money, you know, with all of these things. So again, learning to use the things around us and utilizing that was what I grew up with. And now I can turn around and make all the connections and see all of the value in it. Some of it, of course, was lost because you try to, you know, become more urban and sometimes step away from, you know, your roots with things because it makes you feel like you're a bit outdated. But now you can really turn around and see the value. And, you know, detox is something that is also very popular right now and gained a lot more traction. And I didn't make the connection back then, but that is what, you know, something my grandmother did after the summer break before you went back to school. She always made us purge because she was like, you ate so much crap during the break. You weren't eating properly. And she would make us take like this, you know, drink different liquids for about 2 weeks. And then at the end of the 2 week period, she'd make all of these concoctions and you would take a purge with like senna leaves and all of that. And I could say back then, it, you know, it kept me healthy. It, you know, kept my skin clear, but I didn't make the connection. And then I moved to America and I stopped doing that. And up to a day like today, I'm still fighting acne or different things that I didn't always realize, you know, your body does need the occasional detox and the occasional purge, and you start to see more and more the value in a lot of the things that we did or practices that we employed back then.
That was going to be my question too, was once you spent some time in the States and were, you know, had more freedom to maybe spend more time at the supermarket, what kinds of like habits from growing up changed a little bit once you had more access to all the different things that are at the store?
So having a lot, I would say I liked, growing up, we liked our things to be simple. And so if we, you know, looked at packaging and stuff like that, and we couldn't really identify the components, you just didn't buy them. I still do that today. Even though as having a chemistry background and being a food scientist, I can recognize and understand most of the ingredients and know their purpose, I still like it to be simple. I also still employ the philosophy of freshest is best. Like, I will never buy minced garlic in a container ever when I cook. You know, to me, it has to always be fresh garlic. Buying pre-bought or pre-chopped things, that is something that you just you just don't do. I still, you know, you chop and you make those things yourself, because part of the cooking and the experience is making it from scratch and doing the things yourself and seeing how it all comes together. Buying a lot of pre-made, ready-made things was always viewed as being a little bit lazy. And so I still do some of that, albeit I will, you know, buy rotisserie chicken or cut a few corners here and there because of a busier lifestyle. But more often than not, I still ascribe to making it from scratch and doing it as fresh as possible.
I have to laugh because I'm totally in the lazy category. I feel like on most days I might mince garlic in a jar. So I will think of you, Karma, next time as I sit there and chop it. But no, I think, you know, you've made a great point. Like if it's, we have convenience at our fingertips and it's gone to a side where, you know, again, having the ability to be able to purchase that, you know, is something that is of a, you know, a luxury, if you would, on our supermarket shelves. I will say I'm definitely guilty of some of the easy way outs, if you would.
Karma, one thing that I was thinking, you know, growing up on an island, obviously you have to utilize your resources. And one of the things, like when I was in college, I was really passionate about eating things that were local. And I know that you mentioned that. And how did that kind of affect your overall thoughts of eating as you moved to the United States and, you know, your access to food was very different?
You know, we did try to utilize a lot of the things locally, but we also imported a lot of things, you know, with a lot of the American influence, quote unquote, we became Americanized, especially with the newer generation. So we'd still have access to some of the things, especially stuff we saw on TV. But coming here and having all of the different options, you finally were like, oh, you know, things in the store back home, you get to see them here, especially when you've looked at the advertisements. So the way it impacted me was I finally got to see them. And then I realized when I tried some of them, it was not as good as I thought it would be. It was anticlimactic and I just avoided some of them really, and still went back to, you know, knowing what I knew and cooking the way I did growing up.
I keep thinking, when keep hearing you talk, Carmen, keep thinking of my own childhood and my, you know, now newish adulthood. And I'm in a lot of ways experienced things in quite the opposite way. Cause I mean, I'm probably a more or less typical, I probably grew up as the typical American child, you know, eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and lunch meat sandwiches for lunch and juice boxes and Megan, the Lunchables and fruit in a cup and lots of soda. And that being said, I don't want to trash my parents for giving me those things growing up, because we did do a lot of home cooking. We didn't go out to eat a lot, but we did have a lot of those packaged things. You know, both of my parents worked and, you know, but we did cook a lot. But it took me a long time growing up, once I became more aware of my like personal health and personal nutrition, really like late into college and early into my early 20s when I'm finally cooking on my own. It took me so long to stop drinking soda and to stop, you know, buying like packaged chips and things and to cook more often. And even now in my later 20s, it's not been that long, but even now I'm finally starting to realize the value of, you know, eating produce that's, you know, grown locally and not trying to eat, you know, strawberries in the winter and, you know, things like this. And it's been a journey trying to, you know, eschew the more unhealthy things out of my like food life, because I was so used to them growing up, and you just become used to the flavor and the craving is just real, you know. And I am finally starting to experience the point where I still get the cravings for these things, but when I have them, it doesn't taste as good as I remember. So kind of like what you were saying, Karma, when you finally had the chance to try some of these things that you had seen advertised your whole life, then they don't really live up to what you think they're going to be like. So finally, I think my senses are starting to appreciate, you know, the value of real and fresh over, you know, packaged and processed. But it's just kind of crazy how the food that you're exposed to in the, you know, cooking lifestyle you're exposed to growing up can affect your adulthood in, you know, really good or really bad ways.
Yeah, it really, one of the good examples was KFC. So KFC is the longest standing fast food chain in St. Lucia. A few have come and they did not last, but KFC has always been around. And I will tell you, I don't eat KFC when I'm in America. I only eat KFC when I go to St. Lucia because it tastes so different. And you know, when KFC was one of those things when I came here, I thought, oh, you get KFC everywhere and you just, you know, be eating KFC all the time. And that was not the case. And so, you know, there were a lot of things, of course, you know, I wanted to try and I still do and eat. I'm not going to say that I haven't been influenced by my life in America. I would be lying if I said that. But I always try to maintain that balance. And whenever I move to a new place, and I have moved quite a bit since I've been here, I always try to find either a Latin American supermarket or Caribbean supermarket that I know I can still access those things when I need to. I like, you know, cooking my plantains. I still like cooking the way we do on Sundays because Sundays is the day where you make the big meal. You have your meats, whether it's a stewed meat and a baked meat, you have your pies and everything like that. And I think I still do maybe a bit more, a lot healthier right now, but I still reserve like my big cooking day as Sundays. That has been a tradition that I've had growing up. And sometimes the thought of eating out on a Sunday or not cooking on a Sunday, it makes me uncomfortable, even though I'm like, I have to remind myself, you're grown, you're on your own. Nothing's wrong with not cooking today, or nothing wrong is with eating out on a Sunday. But I still instinctively balk at the idea of it's Sunday. I have to make my big meal. I don't have time to do anything else. And so all of these things, I still, you know, it's there. A big thing is balance, and I think that's one of the biggest things that I learned growing up, the way that I did is everything in moderation. You can enjoy everything, but balance is key. The way you eat, the way you party and live your life, but particularly in the way you eat. There's nothing wrong with having the occasional sweet here and there or all of that, but just making sure that you try to maintain that balance and making healthier choices whenever possible.
So here's a question. Do you still like bananas?
I do. Bananas are my favorite fruit. I eat them every single day.
Do you
Do they
like
taste the same?
bananas or plantains better?
Oh,
I mean, they're so different,
they're very
even
different.
though they look similar in shape.
Yeah.
That's it.
I would have to still go with bananas. It's funny because as a child, it was my favorite fruit. I remember when we went to the farm, my mom would cook at the farm, you know, just cook outdoors with pots and pans and whatever she did. And when they called me for my food, I was always too full of bananas to eat because I'd be roaming around the place and be just finding the right bananas and eating them. And I thought I would have grown tired of them right now, but I have not. I eat a banana every single day at least. I like plantains. I love fried plantains the best. It has to be with a meal. Bananas, you don't need that. So I would tend to go with bananas. I think one other thing I would say is my grandmother passed away in 2005, and it wasn't until, you know, I really started pursuing food science and then ended up working for a dietary supplement company that I kind of really missed and realized that I should have made more of an effort to learn a lot of the things that she had to teach. And you know, like I said, at some point in your life you turn your back on these things because you're seeing like, you know, they're old school and they're setting their old ways and you want a newer way of doing things. But I just wish I had spent more time with her and spent a lot of time, a lot more time learning some of the things she had to teach. Because now a lot of that has been lost to me. My mom and my aunt, they still have some of it, but not the way my grandmother did. My grandmother didn't speak, she spoke English, but it was not her strong suit. She spoke our Creole language. So I learned that from her, which my dad didn't want us to do because he felt it ruined your proper English. But she secretly taught us how to speak Creole. But she always had a remedy for something, using something or the other. She had a remedy for when you gave birth and how, what you needed to drink to help purify and cleanse your blood from the afterbirth. She had a remedy for colds. She had a remedy for when you, you know, you injured a body part or when you went off, when one of your lymph nodes was swollen. She had a remedy for just about everything. One of her famous ones, which is why I do not drink gin onto a day like today, is I got really bad cramps. And one of her famous ones was to give us gin and aloes. And that was disgusting. And up to a day like today, I do not drink gin because it reminds me of that. So she just, yeah, she just had all of these things that she did. And she lived to 84, 83, 84. And my grandmother always was healthy and looked way younger than she really was. She kept herself well. She was in a dance group and she had diabetes, but nothing that, you know, impacted her way of life. And then she suffered a stroke and passed away. I really wish I had paid more attention and learned a lot more from her.
It sounds like you have still have these memories of interesting things that
yes.
she had to offer when you were young, like the gin example. It's funny.
Oh, that one I couldn't forget because I cannot drink gin because of it. but yes, growing up in St. Lucia, my life, I would say, was very rich in a lot of different ways that I have come to now appreciate more, and it's really influenced how I approach things. So it was not rich financially, but it was rich in a lot of love and knowledge and a wealth of culture. And we're a really small island, so we're always learning about everything around us and the world. So that exposed me to a lot of things growing up, and I'm really glad for that.
Well, I just feel really lucky that you were willing to share that with us today. This has been really cool.
Thank you.
Thanksperience with food and nutrition. 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 Thanksperience with food and nutrition.